Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Daylight savings kicked in over the weekend, and I think that means there was a little less time to putter in the garden, or was there more time to putter in the garden in the morning? I can't remember.
There'd be more time.
Okay. All right. So, but it was a beautiful day anyway to make some headway into putting the garden to bed for the winter. What worked? What didn't this year? That's the stuff you're supposed to be thinking about. Those are the questions you're supposed to ask in these waning days of fall. Joining us now with her ideas and advice is gardening expert Deborah Kanapke. Deb is Ohio's garden sage, as you know. She's a horticulturist on faculty at Columbus State Community College. She's also the author or co-author of several gardening books. Welcome back to the show, Deb.
Nice to be here. It's a beautiful day today, too.
Is it beautiful?
Well,
I haven't checked.
It's kind of cloudy, but it's fall.
It's dark when I arrived, so I don't know. But it is fall, and it can be pretty. And sometimes when it's kind of cloudy and dark out, that's when the colors pop. So
yeah.
not bad at all. Folks, if you have a question or comment for Deb, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Okay. Has this been a slow fall? Mm-hmm. It seems like all the colors are out at the same time like they often are. I guess the yellows all came out, and then the reds are coming out now that the yellows are gone.
And actually, that's the way
it's... Is that way too simplistic?
No, it's not. Because then the sugar maples, Bridget, have your ashes, but we're losing our ashes. So we're going to lose a lot of that yellow punch early. But...
Because of the emerald ash borer.
Because of the emerald ash borer, which is now just about everywhere in Ohio. I think it's like 81, 82, 83 counties. I've lost track. But I have heard from other people across Ohio that they felt like fall went slow. And I talked to a friend in New York, and she said, boy, this fall was slow. And I think there is a perception. Our seasons are shifting.
Yeah.
And I feel like fall is later. I remember our color used to be the third weekend of October. That was the wow weekend. Mm-hmm. And now I think our wow weekend was just this past one.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like with the fading of the sugar. Well, not fading. The sugar maples are there. The pears are there. And we're getting more color with the pears because they're self-seeding all over the place. Yeah, we have pears all along the freeways.
Oh,
and so we're getting that intense red maroon color. But I felt like it was a slow fall. And why? Because we had that hot summer, then we got all that rain and the trees caught up.
Yeah.
But then they slowed down and then they went fast. It's been that kind of year. Slow down, speed up, slow down.
Right. And we had early fall was very warm. Not too warm. It was almost perfect. For at least a couple weeks, 70 degrees during the day and then 50 at night.
Perfect.
Yeah.
San Diego weather.
This will never be San Diego.
Well, I know. It will never
Let's not get carried away. San Diego.
Yeah, so have I.
This is no San Diego. This is the land of nice complexions because of all the rain and clouds that are ahead of us in the coming months. So what was it, a weird fall? I mean, you said you were going to bring some weather data.
Well,
so is it just our imaginations, or was it actually strange? And does that affect plants that much?
It does.
We know that it does as far as the color, maybe.
I'm looking for my weather data. Okay, here it is. Good Lord. This is what happens when you bring 10 pieces of paper.
This looks pretty technical, folks. I don't know. Okay.
This is from the Beagle, the BYGL, which had its last send on, I think, October 20.
What is Beagle? BYGL.
I love it. That's from the OSU Extension.
That's right.
Yeah. And it is a weekly update every Thursday. You can go to the website, bygl.osu.edu, or you can actually get it sent to you, a plain text copy, every Thursday, which is what I have done. And it reminds me to look at it. Otherwise, I would forget. And then if you want to see the pretty pictures with all the bugs and the diseases and trees, et cetera, you can go to the website and they're there. But this is all weather data from the Beagle, as we all call it. And what I brought was the rain data. I say data.
I say data, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, okay.
I've heard very smart people call it data.
Potato,
right?
Potato, yeah. So interestingly enough, from January 1st to October 15th, we actually had more rain than usual. No, less rain. I'm sorry. Our normal precipitation is almost 35 inches. We had just under 31.
That's not so good.
Yeah, we're 3 inches down. Now, we still have 3 months. We still can get snow and more rain, and we might catch up by the end of, you know, December 31st to make up those 3 inches.
We've already had snow. Isn't that weird?
Yes, and we had snow early
in October.
Yeah, I know that was, but it didn't stick.
No.
But it was beautiful.
It was.
And that's the kind of fall we've had, these back and forth weird events. So it seems like we get a taste of winter, then we went back to summer. Then we went back to fall.
Do we still get Indian summer yet? Because we've had the frost. Now, don't we get something?
We're supposed to.
Aren't we supposed to get something here?
We're supposed to get some 70-degree weather.
Okay, yeah.
Like an Indian summer. But does Indian summer come in November? I mean, that's a question for everyone out there.
I'm verplanked. I don't know. I don't know.
So, but if you look at how much rain we've had, it's gone up and down. Like, we had no rain. No rain for 2 weeks, and then we had a bunch of rain. I mean, it just, it's been crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been 2 inches at a time,
yeah.
And then it's all at once.
Yeah.
It's, boom.
Yep.
Instead of, oh, wouldn't it be nice to have a half an inch here, a half
wouldn't
an inch there?
Wouldn't it just be a nice long rainy night or something mm-hmm. like that?
And we haven't really had that. Like the other night, I was woken up with wind. That was an amazing windstorm. Went outside the next day, and I had branches everywhere in the yard.
It didn't barely touch us in Worthington,
yeah.
And you're not far from me.
No.
So, you know, it's interesting how narrow they can be. Do you want to take some calls?
Sure.
All right. Luella in Westerville, you're on the air with Deborah Kanapke. Welcome to the show, Luella.
Thank you so much.
Hi.
I have a butterfly bush, and it has gotten extremely tall. It blooms up till the freezing kills it,
mm-hmm.
and we love it. However, it needs to be cut back, and I was wondering what time of the year do that?
I usually cut the butterfly bush back in, I'd say, about mid-March to mid-April to give you a range of time.
So you do it before the season?
I do it before the season. Some people wait till they see where it's breaking, but I like to do it before it starts sending all of its energy up, and then I cut it off. So I will cut it down anywhere from 6 to 12 inches, depending on where you want it. If that's too much for you, then take it down 2 feet, and it will bud from, you'll notice buds on the branches. You want to cut above, right above a bud, about a quarter to a half an inch.
Okay, Luella, thanks a lot. Good question. Mike in Columbus, you're on the air with Deborah Kanapke. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Deborah. I'd just like to raise a couple of tomato plants, a couple of pepper plants. I have a raised garden, really rich soil, but I'm not supposed to plant the same product or the same plants year after year, and they're both in the same family. Is there anything I can do to this really small garden so that I can keep on planting the same plants year in and year out?
Very good question,
mm-hmm.
Mike.
It is, because we now have late blight, which is something that builds up in the soil. And it's a Phytophthora. You might see the
oh, here we
no,
go.
No, no, no. But it's a beautiful name. And then
okay,
the
Phytophthora.
Specific, but Phytophthora infestans. That's the second part of the name,
wow.
Infest. And that was what caused the tomato famine. So it's the same species of fungi or fungus. And it builds up in the soil over time, which is why you can get 2 years out of the same place. But by the third year, there's this really active population of fungus that's saying, hey, let's get to this plant.
So if you're in your third year with the raised garden,
mm-hmm.
what should you do instead of tomatoes?
You need to rotate. You need to bring in something that is not in the tomato-potato family.
Like cauliflower?
Beans, yeah, beans okay. would be in the... Well, the bean family, the cabbage family. But he's asking, how can he keep his tomatoes in that garden? And my answer to that is, can you build another raised bed and go back and forth between the two? In the meantime, on the other one, if you can do another raised bed, if you can put some hot compost, this is an experiment. This I do not have data to back this up. But Dr. Harry Hoytink, professor emeritus at Ohio State, used compost to try to suppress pathogens in potting soil container mixes. I asked him if he'd take it out to the garden. He said, well, that wasn't his focus. So I keep on waiting for someone. Maybe I should go back for my doctorate and do different composts in soil and see if that suppresses fungi, bacteria in the soil so that you can keep planting the same thing
because
in the same
place. Because
that's
an eternal question. We talk about it every time. I'm always grasping, hoping you'll say something different every time.
Because I have
the same problem, Mike.
This is my different thing. Get that chicken compost in there in the fall.
Oh, yeah, the chicken
and burn
compost.
Things up, and then the chicken compost will re-inoculate with all kinds of good stuff.
Where, pray tell, do you get chicken compost?
You find someone who has chickens.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, I'm seriously considering, I just saw some beautiful chickens last weekend. They're gorgeous. And we can have, as long as I don't have a rooster, I think my neighbors won't hate me. But I don't know if my husband's ready for me to have three chickens.
The only person I know who has chickens also has a really big garden, so I'm imagining she probably uses her own. Mike, good luck with that.
Yeah,
we talk about it every time.
And I hope that helps, and I hope you have some room for a second bed that you can go back and forth with your tomatoes and try that hot compost. And also green manures can sometimes help, because if you can keep your plants in good nutrition, not shocking them with big hits of nutrition, but constant, steady food with compost, they will do better even when they are infected.
Green manures, would that be like grass-raised cattle or?
Well, green manures would be actually growing plants and then knocking them down
before they go into seed. Okay.
So buckwheat, fescues. They call it green manure.
Okay.
And there are a lot of different legumes that you can put down, but you don't let them go to seed. You knock them down and leave it there and kind of incorporate that into the soil so that you're upping the nitrogen in a slow, gentle way.
My guest is Deborah Kanapke, Ohio's Garden Sage. We'll continue our conversation. And Chris from Galena, do not hang up. I absolutely want to know what her answer to your question is. So hang in there with us. If you want to give a call and talk to Deborah Kanapke, 614-292-8513. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Yes, it is autumn. We're well into autumn and, you know, heading into early winter. But this is a good time to think about your garden and think about how to put your garden to bed. How do you do it? My guest today is Deborah Kanapke. She is a horticulturist. She's on faculty at Columbus State Community College. She's the author or co-author of several gardening books and a blog called Heartland Gardening. She's with two other people. So if you want to check that out, we have a link on that at our website at wosu.org/allsides. If you have a question for Deborah, 614-292-8513. And Chris and Galena, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I had a beautiful shade garden underneath an emerald ash borer, and we took it out. And it's no longer a shade garden. I took out the hostas and the bleeding hearts and the ferns and all that. And now my husband has moved our bird feeders over into that sort of messed up area from where we took the tree out. And I was wondering if you have any suggestions on what will grow underneath this bird feeder with some of the seeds falling and
grass growing. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thistle seeds you can get. Periodic thistles and periodic sunflowers. Well, one of the things that you might be interested in doing to replace that tree is put in an evergreen so you have some shelter for the birds. Because just as an aside, if there are other trees in around the area, you might get your Cooper's hawks, which are the bird feeder raiders, come in and take your birds from your feeders now that it's a nice open area. So what to grow underneath? There are a lot of things you can grow, but I will tell you that if you're using sunflower oilers, sunflower seed coats do have a suppression effect on seeds, seed germination. So it'll be somewhat difficult to grow from seed under there, but should be okay for most of your plants. What you might consider are plants that birds will also feed from along with what you put in the feeder, like purple coneflower, black-eyed Susan, since it's sunny. So a lot of the daisy family, they also, and also the shelter from some type of evergreen in that area. You can put in some shrubs, small shrubs. There's one that I'm loving right now. It's very cute. It's the ninebark, which is a native plant, and it has beautiful stems and leaves. And there's one that's short called Little Devil. Right now it's only 2.5 feet tall, but you can get them at about 4 feet tall, and there's one that grows to about 6.
It's called ninebark?
Ninebark. It's a physocarpus.
Oh, here we
go. Opulifolius.
Okay.
I just thought, would you prefer ninebark? You asked.
Chris, what do you think?
I'll go with ninebark.
She descends into the Latin and it's like, okay, all right.
I'm trying to be cool here. So,
Chris, I'm really glad you called because I had that question too. So thanks a lot.
Oh, yeah. Great. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Can I add one other thing?
Sure.
Some berry plants. You might also look at aronia.
The
aronia, which is aronia... black choke cherry. There's a red one and a black one, and the birds love those berries. So you can support your feeders by also giving them fall food.
All right. That's great. An email from a listener in Columbus has two questions about lavender and containers. The plants are about 2.5 years old, and I'm not sure what to do to prepare for winter and storage. Also, for the last couple of months, the plants have not looked as good as I had hoped they would. Is there anything I can do to help this year or get them ready for cold months and have a better start next year?
Okay, they're in containers. So my thought is that the mix may have compacted. And one of the things that lavenders hate is poor drainage. And it might be that their roots are just being essentially suffocated. They grow on rocks in the Mediterranean and put their fibrous roots in between the cracks. And they like a looser, gritty soil. So if they've been in that container for 2 years, my guess is they're declining because, one, they may be lacking nutrition, and two, too tight of a mix, too compact. To get them ready for winter, it's kind of late to be taking them out and putting them in the ground. What I might do is kind of try to loosen up the soil by something called vertical mulching, making a slit in the soil and maybe putting some leaf mold in there or whatever. Not being able to see the plants and diagnosing what the problem could be is tough, but I am concerned about the compaction.
I've got a row of lavender. How many blooms do you get a season out of lavender?
You can get two.
Okay.
The first one is in June,
okay.
and then
you cut it down.
Do a nice cut back in June. You know,
to like how much?
Well, if the inflorescence flower stem is about, I don't know which one you have, but anywhere from 4 to 12 inches tall, I usually like to take it down into the shrub a couple inches. I do a ponytail cut. I do this, and I go cut underneath.
Okay.
And it makes sort of a mound. And then you can get a second bloom August, September, and I will cut off the stems, the flowering stems, but I don't go into the plant itself because that's kind of a cue to start growing, and you don't want them to do active growing like they did in June.
Okay.
But I use that, all the lavender and sachets and food and whatever.
Love it. And is lavender really, does it make a good container plant necessarily? Is it one that you would recommend?
People grow lavender in containers, and it might be that
it looks
the
pretty.
Emailer, and does look beautiful, person who emailed maybe living in an apartment or whatever and likes lavender, and so that's one way to do it. I think sometimes in containers, we look at those plants as being shorter lived because container growing, it's hard to balance out that growing medium, the fertility, the water, et cetera, and it's easy to rot out lavenders in a container.
Nancy in Johnstown, you're on the air. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, we have a circular drive, and in the center we have a big planting of impatiens, which they have done beautifully except for the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get halfway through the growing season, and then they just completely die. And I have read that it's something called dusty mite that lives in the soil. And that I've read there was nothing they could do about it. And I didn't know if there was anything that could be done other than just completely replacing the soil.
Okay.
I could barely even find impatiens this year.
Yeah, and that's because of downy mildew. Is that what you've read about? I'm not sure. I've not heard of.
Yeah.
Okay, downy mildew.
Yeah.
Downy mildew is a fungus that it looks kind of whitish underneath the leaf. So you might not notice it, but you notice the edge of the leaves curl under and then they're dead. And there's been a problem with downy mildew spores on impatiens. What we're recommending in the industry is you choose another plant for a couple years. Let the downy mildew fungus get into lower population in the soil. It's very similar to Phytophthora. Downy mildew is a soil-borne pathogen.
The stuff that gets to the tomatoes?
The tomatoes, uh-huh. And potatoes, yeah. So for a couple years, let's look at a different impatiens or a different plant. Now, the New Guinea impatiens are resistant to the downy mildew. So if you like those with their different colors and their variegated leaves, take a look. If not, you can look at some of the other shade-loving annuals like Taurenia. The other name for that is wishbone flower. You look inside and the stamens make a wishbone shape. It's very cool. There are begonias. Begonias are absolutely gorgeous. So there are some other options. And you need to let the downy mildew go down. It's in your soil. Do not put your favorite impatiens back there next year.
Else. You know, if you like those pops of color, right. A lot of people just use them for that. It's been hard to give them up for that. But
the New Guinea impatiens, wow, they are incredible. And so the wishbone flower and the begonias, oh my gosh, the tuberous begonias, you can get color like you've never seen. So there's options.
Good luck, Nancy.
Yeah.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and my guest is Deborah Kanapke, Ohio's Garden Sage. If you have a question or comment for Deborah, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about the fall garden. What are you doing with yours? What do you want to do next spring? What should you be thinking about over the winter? Give us a call. Well, you can call us, but Deborah's the only one that'll be able to answer your questions. Victor in Columbus. Hi, Victor.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have three vegetable box raised beds that I've just cleared out, and I was wondering what I should cover them with to get them through the winter till next year. I've put on some grass clippings and mulched leaves.
That's wonderful. Now, the thing is make sure it stays loose because you want to make sure that you've not put too much grass on there. Otherwise, you can get more of an anaerobic kind of situation. And you might even go out with your rake and just kind of rake through them. It's good exercise in the middle of the winter. But that's an excellent cover to put on them and get the nutrition going for next year. And if you have any table scraps, you know, kitchen, only vegetative, but any of that, and you have a food processor or blender, blend that up and put that in the garden too.
Oh, okay.
Or chop it up. Or just chopped up, you know, all those potato peels, make them work.
What about coffee grounds?
Coffee grounds are excellent.
That's my question, whether I should put mulch on with it or not.
You don't need mulch. You did put a mulch on with the grass and the leaves,
right.
And it's what you have. So if during the winter you make a big pot of soup, all those vegetable clippings, vegetable shavings, chop them up, put those in the garden too.
Okay, great. Right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Victor. A couple questions. Some of my best tomatoes, I had the problem with the tomatoes. I had a really good year with tomatoes, I thought. Mm-hmm. Until the end, and then
that's when it hit.
And then the other thing. So the one thing was that my tomato volunteers were the best tomatoes I had all summer. The ones that just pop up next to the boxes, you know, because we have the raised boxes, and I kept those, and they fed me all summer.
You had your own hybrids.
Oh, did I?
Yes, you did. And if you like the flavor of them?
Yeah, they were those small little ones that grow in rows.
The cherry tomatoes tend to be somewhat resistant to late blight. Hmm. My cherries were the last to get it, and even then it wasn't severe. All my heirlooms, my big, beautiful, juicy heirlooms, with the exception of gold medal and pineapple, just went south. In about, end of August. Mm-hmm. So the ones, and cherries will self-seed quite readily. So if that's what's working for you, that might be what you do for a couple of years until we get a handle on how to deal. get a handle on this late blight.
I, for the first time this year, grew dahlias.
Mm-hmm. Aren't they beautiful?
I think I've shown you some pictures of them. I don't know. But I forgot to cover them on the frost.
That's not a problem. Our ground has not frozen yet. It's still warm.
But they just fell.
And that's fine.
Okay.
And that's actually the clue that now's the time to dig them up.
Oh, okay.
So you can dig them up anytime. Our ground has not gotten so cold that they're starting to rot, but you better do it soon.
I had all these beautiful flowers, though. Could I have covered them and preserved them or not?
You could have for those three nights when we went really down, but that's kind of the time that dahlias go down.
You just got to let them go.
I know some people that cover them religiously, extending the season. To me, that's more work than I want to do for my dahlias, so I enjoy them.
I'm not good at covering stuff up, but I just thought maybe they were so pretty.
But you can do that, and they will last longer.
Email from Wendy. My husband and I have a small garden in full sun. While we don't have any trees in our yard, the leaves from the neighbor's trees blow into our yard. I like to rake them into the garden to decompose during the winter and save on yard waste bags, etc. My husband discourages me from doing this, as he says the leaves do not help the soil because they do not break down all the way. Who's right? Can you help me settle this once and for all?
Ooh, this is like car talk.
Yeah. No, it is.
Okay. I do not want to get in the middle of a marital discussion, but what with those leaves, if you can chop them up with a lawnmower, run the lawnmower over them so that starts the process of them breaking down, it will be better for your vegetable garden. I will tell you, though, that most of our vegetables like a more bacterial kind of soil situation, which we get with green manures, with
grass clippings.
Grass clippings. Okay. So if you can mow some grass into those leaves, they will break down better. Leaves sometimes make the soil more acidic, not always, and not to a great degree, but they can. I use leaves in my garden. If they're there, I leave them in, and I don't even chop them up. So, but if you do chop them up, that could be the compromise between you and your husband. But get some green manure in there too, some grass clippings, some shavings from your vegetable soup.
Lisa in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Lisa.
Hello.
Thank you so much. I have an elephant ear question.
Okay.
I have never successfully overwintered that big bulb. And I know you can. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how.
There are two ways you can do this. One, you can leave it in the pot that it is in, bring it into your garage. Do not let it freeze. If your garage freezes, then put it somewhere where it will stay cool but not freeze. And you can just keep the soil barely moist. It will go into dormancy. Or you can take it out of the soil, let it dry off, put it in something like Excelsior that used to be used as a packing material, and you keep it in the dark and you keep it cool but not freezing. And you go and mist it from time to time. I leave mine in my pot, and it's underneath my greenhouse bench. If you don't have a greenhouse, then again, look for that cool spot that doesn't freeze and just keep it slightly moist. Let it go dormant, and that's how you'll keep it.
Now, mine is in my garden, so I plant them
in. Then you need to dig it up.
And then I don't have a cool spot. Like, are you talking 60?
I'm talking about
above freezing.
So anywhere from 36 degrees up to about 60.
Okay. I will give that a try. Worst that can happen is I buy another one. Right.
And you support our industry.
Right. That's right. Thank you. So much.
Good attitude, Lisa. An email from Robert. He says, I have a lot of deciduous. Mm-hmm. He put in parentheses, leaf dropping
yes.
trees in and around my yard. Using my lawnmower, I mulch leaves into my yard. I do this several times a year, several times during the fall, being sure to not leave mulch residue on the lawn by going over the lawn a second time with a lawnmower in a different direction. Question, can too many leaves be mulched into a lawn if one is not, if one is sure not to leave a thick residue of mulch on the lawn?
Interesting question. If you are breaking them up into small pieces and you're barely seeing them on top of the lawn, that should be fine. The problem comes when you leave a mass, a big pile of leaves in an area, and you can get some fungal issues, disease issues, or you can just kill the lawn. Now, if your intent is to kill the lawn, then really pile them high. But if you're mulching and you don't see much residue, you're doing a great job. In fact, you are building phenomenal soil, which will build a phenomenal lawn.
We have a few more calls. If you'd like to give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest, Deborah Konapke, Ohio's Garden Sage, is here to answer your questions. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It is, yes, indeedy, it is fallout, and winter is on its way, but that doesn't mean the gardening stops. In the studio with me today, Deborah Konapke is back, Ohio's Garden Sage. So if you have a question or comment, get it in, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from David. He writes, I have a hydrangea macrophylla mm-hmm. plant in its second year. Last year I cut it back and it did not flower this year. Should I have not cut it back? And if I should, when is a good time to do this? Okay, David. What's a hydrangea?
Okay.
It's
a big leaf hydrangea.
Jeez.
Yeah. Okay. See, well, he's just, you know, well, using the botanical nomenclature. That's... Yeah, hydrangea macrophylla is the big leaf hydrangea.
Oh, okay. Macrophylla, okay.
Yeah, that's okay. Potato, potato. Mm-hmm. And they put their buds, they make their buds the previous summer for next year. Mm. So if you cut it hard, and I'm not sure when you did that, if you did that in the fall, you did take all your flowers off. So what you want to do is prune it right after it blooms, so that it makes new wood and the buds on that wood.
But not all hydrangeas are the same.
No, they're not.
And that kills me. Mm-hmm. I have a couple different kinds, but I think I figured out which are the macrophyllas
yeah.
now.
So. And the issue with some of them need to be cut down because they grow totally from the ground again. Especially a lot of those, the endless summer types, that the constant bloomers, mm-hmm. Allegedly constant bloomers, they die on top. That's if the deer don't eat them, too. Mm-hmm. And then others, like the tall ones, the panicled hydrangeas, you prune them as you want them to be because you don't want to cut them all the way down unless you're rejuvenating the shrub. And their buds are already formed. So if you cut them in the fall, you've lost your blooms.
It's really important with hydrangeas to know exactly which kind you have.
Yes, it is.
And to keep track of which kind you have mm-hmm. because the pruning, I have been through all the troubles that David has without even knowing how you say right. what the Latin reference yeah. is. So, you know, I've got all this kind of troubles. All right, so let's see. Marcia in Mount Vernon. Hi, Marcia, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You want to talk about lilacs? I've had a funeral for one a few months ago. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm afraid that's where mine is headed.
Oh, no.
Anyway, I got this lilac bush about 7 or 8 years ago from my children for Mother's Day, and it has only bloomed max 5 blooms, probably 3 to 5 average.
Oh, my.
What do I do?
How big is this lilac?
It's large. It's like it's probably 7 or 8 foot tall now.
Is pruning an issue, perhaps?
Pruning could be an issue. Do you prune it?
I have pruned it very little, not much at all, just like dead branches.
Is it in shade or sun?
It's in sun.
Okay, that's good. As to why it's not blooming a lot, maybe this is totally guessing. It might not have enough nutrition. And the type of nutrition it needs is for flower boosting. So higher numbers with the second and third phosphorus and potassium. But what you want is a gentle, there's espoma. You can go to your favorite garden center and get a tree and shrub, a blooming tree and shrub formulation. You can talk to someone there. The other thing might be that it might not just be a good bloomer, and you can try pruning, but always prune right after it blooms. Do not prune it in the fall, because it too makes its buds for blooming on that current year's wood. And good luck.
Yep. Good luck, Marcia. Harold in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Harold.
Hi.
Hi, good morning. I had a question about two cherry trees. One's a Bing, one's a Rainier that I put in this past spring, and they were promptly invaded with aphids, and then they got a leaf curl on them, and I'm wondering, Oakland Nursery told me just hit them with a Volek oil spray, but it didn't seem to help a whole lot with the leaf curl, and I was wondering if there's anything I can do to prevent a reoccurrence next spring.
Well, the leaf curl was probably from the aphids feeding on the leaf, and when they suck the juices out, the leaf curls. That could be it, unless it was, there are fungi that also will cause leaf curls, not being able to see it. So you've already gone to Oakland Park, and they suggested a dormant oil?
Well, just an oil spray.
Okay. And that
they
has
said, just keep what I'm doing. I told them I was using Volek oil spray, and they said, just keep doing that. There's not much you can do with it right now.
Well, not right now you can't. I mean, you have to do it. There's a definite timing with these horticultural oils. And read the label. And you're going to have to start in the spring and catch those aphids. And also, a good thing would be to put plants in that attract parasitic wasps and beneficial insects to help fight your aphid population and keep it under control.
Okay, Harold, good luck with that. My Montmorency's did fine. Mm-hmm. I should say, I make it sound like I have two. I only have one. But we did have a real problem with the birds going after the cherries, and I'm very...
Bird netting.
Right. So I wanted to ask you about that. The bird netting, it seemed like it kind of made some of the leaves droop for the rest of the summer.
It does.
Okay. All right. Well, it's worth it.
Okay.
Too bad for those leaves. Let's see. Email from Madison. She says, we live along an alley and the weeds grow like crazy all summer long. My husband and I cut them back often, but they still take over. And now they are creeping into our yard and are so strong, they are bending our fence.
Oh, my.
We are thinking about putting down a tarp and some cinders to prevent the weeds from growing next year. What will work? Do we do that now? In the early spring, technically this alley is city property, but they only cut back the weeds once a year. That is not enough, and we can't take it. I'm glad you didn't give us an exact location, Madison.
Yeah.
Go ahead. So, go ahead.
That's good. You can use something to cover them. In that case... not knowing what kind of weed it is, but if it's tough enough to pull down a fence, my goodness, you have you tried digging them out?
It's just an emailer.
Just an
email.
Shoot.
You can't get any feedback here.
All right. So what you need to do, if you can cover them, put cinders, that might help, but they might also grow underneath and up again. This might be one case where I might recommend poisoning them. But it is city property, so be careful. But other than that, normally I would pull and try to get the roots out. But it sounds like this is a huge task. Try the exclusion or try the covering, and also think about digging.
Okay, Madison, thanks for that email. And Sarah in Westerville, you're on the air. You want to talk about strawberries?
Yes, I've got strawberries in my front yard. And over the winter, we usually cover them with straw, but it's not very aesthetically pleasing. I'm wondering if there's any other kind of cover we could put to protect them through the winter that would look a bit nicer.
First of all, that's really cool that you have strawberries in your front yard. And second, I guess beauty is in the eye of the beholder, because I put straw on mine and I really like the way it looks because it looks like it's winter. And then if you put some, maybe some decorative items on it, it's your winter display.
like a manger and a baby.
Yeah, we call that camouflage. I don't know of anything else that works as well as straw for protecting and also creating that bed underneath so that the berries don't sit on the ground in the spring. And I don't have another option for you that wouldn't look, I mean, when you put it under, you know, kind of artfully arrange it and maybe put some holly berries on it or something so it looks decorative. And I think you might have some fun with it in that way. And then you, if you see it happening elsewhere in the neighborhood, you know you've made an impression.
Thank you.
All You're right. Welcome. Thanks, Sarah. Email from Anne. Can your guest speak about storing cannas and begonia tubers?
Yes, I can. Again, there's two ways you can do this. I've done this both ways. I've left them in pots in soil and kept the soil barely moist. And the other way, and this is in a cool area. In my case, it is in underneath my benches in the greenhouse, underneath where my succulents are, so they don't get a lot of water. I've also put them in the garage in the pots when I ran out of room because I had so many cannas and begonias. They cannot freeze. So wherever you put them, if it goes below 36 degrees, 35 degrees, that will be a problem. They'll turn into mush. I've also layered them with Excelsior or some type of packing material. You could even use, if you got stuck with all those darn styrofoam peanuts.
Oh, really?
You could use them for that too. What you need is so that the air can get around and that they don't have fungal or bacterial problems.
And moisture too.
And moisture. But when they were in the garage, once or twice a month, I went down and misted my packed in boxes. Gosh. Yeah, and you know those little things you get all those clementines
in?
I save those, and I'll put my bulbs in those, put something, you know, underneath them to keep them up off of the wood, and I don't have them touching each other. So this, you might decide you have too many of them, so this is when you gift them to other people and say, this is how you overwinter them, and then you put them in the spring. So those are the two ways that you can do it, or that I have done it and been successful at both.
Fred in Worthington, you're on the air with Deborah Kanapke. Welcome to the show, Fred.
Hi, Fred.
Hi, Fred. Hello, Deb. I have a question about what you would recommend for small shrubs or a dwarf variety of some larger shrub that are not spreading, let's say 2 feet or so in height, for good fall color in the garden. And this for use in garden beds. I like Amelanchier and Spirea, but
they get
of course
big.
The regular varieties are too big.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can try, I might suggest mixing in maybe some dwarf conifers, taking a look at some of those. But some of the deciduous plants that look good, there are some shorter dogwoods, and you can keep them shorter with pruning. There's also, I just talked about that cute little nine bark, which is called Little Devil. Take a look for that. It's beautiful maroon during the whole year, and now it's going to a scarlet color that's really attractive.
Yeah, I've heard of nine bark, but I've never tried it.
Yeah.
There are isn't that small?
Yes. Well, this is Little Devil. And then also there are some Weigelas that you can take a look at. Weigela, Weigela. I think that is their botanical name and their common name. They have beautiful bell flowers that attract hummingbirds, and there are many that stay in the 18-inch to 24-inch height range. There are, and again, like I said, the dwarf conifers, there are some lovely ones to kind of intermix. And I'm not sure, you didn't say sun or shade. There are some beautiful...
Yes, we've got kind of a mixture. I think it's... The way we have it arranged, it's reasonably sunny.
Okay. There's also
it's immediately adjacent to a canopy of a tulip tree, and it's on the north side of the house, but it's a little ways from the roof.
Also, take a look at boxwood. They don't give you a change in color, but they give you a green if you don't like dwarf conifers. It's nice to have the contrast with greens. They show up those bright colors even more. There's Grace Hendricks, and there is Green Gem. You know, these are all small ones. So there's quite a variety of small shrubs. Just know that a lot of times, if the nutrition is good, they'll get bigger. There are some small viburnums, too. The European cranberry bush has a nanum, which means small.
All right, Fred, thank you for that call. I am working my way down. Marilyn from Columbus, you're on the air with Deborah Kanapke. Welcome, Marilyn.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I love your program.
Thank you.
And my question has to do with a gardenia, which I brought about 5 years ago, and it was blooming. And so in the summer, I put it outside, and in the winter, I bring it in. And I live in a condo, so my gardening is on the balcony. But anyway, ever since then, it's grown huge now, and but it's all leaves. And last year, for the first time, or this year, actually, I had one bloom, and that was it. So I'm wondering what I can do maybe to encourage blossoms instead of leaves.
Because after all,
the gardenia,
that's what you're growing.
First of all, I want to congratulate you on carrying over a shrub that is difficult to grow in this climate. So you get kudos for that, that it's alive. Now, they are heavy, heavy, heavy feeders. So during the summer when they're in active growth, they really, so don't change anything else you're doing, but do increase the nutrition and look for, I believe there's an acid-loving, it does like a little bit more acidic soil, I believe. I might have to look that up and get back to you on that. But there is a bloom booster, Espoma mix, and other fertilizers that are for flower production. And that's what you want, more phosphorus and more potassium, but not a lot, not big high numbers, but lower nitrogen and more phosphorus, more potassium in the numbers. Do you know what that means, Marilyn?
In the winter?
No, this would be in the summer during active growth, not in the winter.
Okay, not in the winter.
Yeah,
okay.
In the summer is when you're going to feed it.
Okay. All right.
Thank you,
Marilyn. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
I think we have time for just another call.
Okay.
John in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, John.
Hello, John. Hello, guys.
Hi.
This is John. How are we doing today?
Good.
I've got an issue. I'm moving out of my residence right now. I've got three well-established rose bushes, and I've got one rose bush that I have probably got 2 years in the ground now. And I'd like to move them with me. Is this too late in the year, or is this going to be possible to be able to keep my favorite roses?
This is kind of late to be transplanting roses.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. And I was wondering if there was anything I may be able to do to keep them.
You're not losing anything if you try, because
okay.
If you don't take them with you, then
they're gone anyway.
They're gone anyway. So what you need to do is get big pots, and go around the rose and take a very large root ball and get that into the large pots. I don't know if you'll be able to save them, because the two-year-old one maybe, but older ones might be a problem. And if not, then you can buy new ones for your new house.
Okay. Good luck, John, with
good
that.
Good luck.
Yeah, I'd love to hear how that goes. We have an email from Rob. We only have about a minute left.
Okay, I'll go fast.
I have a patio with a small 20x20 area of green space that contains a birch tree and a dense ground cover of English ivy. And for the past 2 years, this area has been invaded by thistles. We pull them, always attempting to get the roots. This year particularly, they've come back with a vengeance. I'd gladly use a Roundup-type product to eliminate all the ground cover thistles and ivy to end the problem and start over. But I imagine that would be harmful to the birch tree. Yay, nay?
It could be. If there is communication between the roots of the ivy and the birch tree, you'd have to be very careful about how you're spraying it and your drift and whatever. So what you might end up doing is killing most of it that's away. And as you get closer, stop using and just keep pulling, because that's the best way to do it.
All right. Well, Deborah Kanapke, once again, more questions than answers, only because we couldn't get to all the questions. So
I'm sorry.
Thank you for all your answers.
Thank you.
It's been great to see you again.
Same here.
Take care. Thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.